Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is worsening.
The severe restrictions on aid access and delivery have only aggravated the situation, leading to starvation among Gaza's population and intensifying an already dire humanitarian crisis.
President Biden offers compromise to win congressional approval for more Ukraine aid. A Senegalese court will decide on tomorrow, Thursday, whether opposition leader Ousmane Sonko should be put back on the list of candidates for the 2024 presidential polls. There appears to be a governance crisis arising in Nigeria's Rivers State. Kenyan President William Ruto officially announces a visa-free policy beginning in January.
The president of Kenya today, Dr. William Ruto, is saying, as African, what is the problem of a Maasai moving from Kenya to his fellow Maasai in Tanzania? Why does he need a visa to move across?
And the U.S. says Sudanese parties have committed atrocities. We will get reaction from Human Rights Watch. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. As heavy fighting in Gaza continues, humanitarian organizations warn of a growing crisis in the Gaza Strip with the onset of winter. Palestinians, 85% of the population, have been internally displaced and warn of the spread of disease. Viewer's Linda Grasstein reports from Jerusalem.
The humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is growing increasingly dire, according to aid organizations working there. They say they have stopped much of their aid distribution efforts in southern Gaza because Israeli airstrikes and ground operations aimed at Hamas make it too dangerous.
The severe restrictions on aid access and delivery have only aggravated the situation, leading to starvation among Gaza's population and intensifying an already dire humanitarian crisis. Critical shortages of food, water, electricity, and fuel persist. In overcrowded shelters, scarcity of these items heightens health risks.
Medical professionals say the healthcare system is collapsing, and there are concerns about disease spreading, especially among an estimated 1 million children.
Hundreds of children lining up for a single toilet in the south. Our teams are telling us of maggots being picked from wounds and children undergoing amputations without anesthetic. More than a million children, practically all of the child population of Gaza, is left with nowhere to go as ground operations continue to expand in the south.
Israeli officials say they are doing whatever they can to allow humanitarian aid to reach those who need it. They are opening another terminal at the Kerem Shalom border crossing to speed up the Israeli inspections of the aid, which is done to prevent weapons smuggling.
In Nitzana, we expanded the capabilities, the inspections, and we accelerated the process. Today, we can inspect up to 250 trucks every day in Nitzana. And as I said, the problem is not Nitzana. The problem is the capability of the UN agencies to collect all the international assistance that, after we are checking it, goes to Rafah.
More than 18,000 Palestinians have been killed in the fighting and almost 50,000 wounded, according to the Hamas-controlled Palestinian Health Authority in Gaza. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has repeatedly called for a ceasefire.
Expect public order to completely break down soon. And an even worse situation could unfold, including epidemic diseases and increased pressure for mass displacement into Egypt.
Egypt is said to be reinforcing the wall it built on its border with Gaza. It has warned Israel and the international community that it will not accept any Palestinian refugees, leaving them to face the winter in a war zone. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky expressed confidence at the White House on Tuesday that if the U.S. Congress will continue to provide military aid, his forces can continue to keep Russia from winning the war that is started against Ukraine. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington says the Ukrainian leader made a comment at a news conference with President Joe Biden following their White House talks.
Following a skeptical reception from some Republicans on Capitol Hill, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky received a warmer welcome at the White House from President Joe Biden of the Democratic Party, who expressed frustration about Republican reluctance to sign off on his additional $61 billion funding request for Ukraine.
Compromise is how democracy works, and I'm ready and offered compromise already. Holding Ukraine funding hostage in the attempt to force through an extreme Republican partisan agenda on the border is not how it works.
Zelensky commented that Ukrainians are giving their lives not only for their own country.
Thanks to Ukraine's success in defense, other European nations are safe from the Russian aggression, unlike in the past. Ukraine can now tackle the Russian dictatorship.
The White House National Security Council says Moscow appears to believe a military deadlock this winter will drain Western support for Kyiv, ultimately handing the advantage to Russia. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
Kenyan President William Ruto has officially announced a visa-free policy for people traveling to Kenya beginning January 2024. Speaking Tuesday to mark his country's 60th independence anniversary, Ruto said the policy will relieve travelers of the burden of manually applying for visas. Instead, he said, those entering Kenya will be issued an electronic travel authority. Joseph Kioko is a Kenyan political analyst. He tells me President Ruto's announcement is long overdue because Africans with language connections do not need visa to travel from one country to another.
Since he became president, he has talked about and is drawn from the European experience that today in Europe, the members of the Schengen country can move around each country's border without a visa. You can move from France to Germany without a visa. You can move from Germany to Austria without a visa. You can move. I mean, they have abolished the visa requirement. The president of Kenya today, Dr. William Ruto, is saying, as Africans, what is the problem of a Maasai moving from Kenya to his fellow Maasai in Tanzania? Why does he need a visa to move across? Why does a Karamojong, who is a native, or a Pokot, whose tribes exist within Uganda and Kenya, require a visa to move across? Then if you take it broadly, we as Africans, why do we need visas? And we are Bantus, or we are Nilo, or we are Kushites. We have a bigger clan together. Why do we need visas to move cross borders that were not there until the partitioning of Africa by the colonialists? It's a bigger debate that the president is putting on the table. If one looks at it from a visa requirement and say, there's a security issue.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to ask also, because there are some people who might be concerned about the security of the country if you just opened up the country.
But you see, then I think people are missing the point. Even before the country was opened, there was insecurity. The people who are coming in into the country on false pretense were coming in whether the visa requirement was there or not. So the question is not about whether visa is free or not. Like somebody would have said, we are addressing a right solution to the wrong problem. There is a problem, yes, but this solution is not to that problem. That there have been people, illegal immigrants, coming into Kenya, yes. But the solution is not addressing the visa requirement issue or restricting the visa requirement issue, because they have been coming into Kenya whether visa is free or for payment. But the bigger question that the president is addressing and the call for action is that, as a country, how much do we gain by opening up our borders? How much do we as Kenyans, with the human capital that we have, with the human intelligence that we have, how much more do we as Africans and we as Kenyans, do we place ourselves in that position for net benefit moving forward? I think that's the question President Ruto is asking.
So this was the 60th independence anniversary of Kenya. What did President Ruto have to say about the state of the nation, particularly the economy?
I think in today's speech he's taken stock where we've come from as a country. I mean, from a unitary state, how we got independence and the power was centralized in Nairobi, to a devolved state of government today, where we have, of course, a centralized government with 47 devolved units, the existence of a bicameral parliament of the National Assembly and Senate, the existence of new principles of governance as exposed through public participation, the independence of the judiciary. So there's a way in which the nation has grown to today, where we as a country, led by Dr. President Ruto, is saying that it is us who've inherited this government that must now continue forging a new, brighter future. Our fathers gave us the state. They gave us the state on a clean slate. Do what it is you want to do with it.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you. 60th independent anniversary wishes to you and the people of Kenya.
Thank you very much. And may God bless our country. May God allow us to prosper and flourish, because we can only become great.
Joseph Kioko is a Kenyan political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Nairobi. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 13th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A Senegalese court heard arguments yesterday, Tuesday, whether opposition leader Ousmane Sonko should be put back on the list of candidates for the 2024 presidential polls. His name was removed earlier this year after he was convicted for having sex with a minor. Sonko has said that the charges against him were all politically motivated to keep him from running for president. Nafisa Dia is a member of Sonko's Pastel party. She tells me the court said it will deliver its ruling tomorrow, Thursday.
Ousmane Sonko's lawyers, they tried to defend the former decision of the judge from Diganchor, if you remember, the one who asked the Minister of Domestic Affairs to put him back in the list of people who are allowed to run for the presidential election or to vote, because he has been delisted and the judge decided that it was not lawful. And the state brought that case to another court saying that no, he cannot be put back in the list. So that was the hearing of those people today. And what the Ousmane Sonko's lawyers said was that the way he was condemned in absentia, so it was not possible for them to notify him that he has been delisted from the list of people who are able to vote. But when you delist someone, you have to notify it to that person. But how can you notify that decision to someone whom you say that he has been condemned in absentia? So when he's in absentia, so you don't know where he is. So you cannot notify him. He's delisting. So they couldn't notify him. They couldn't notify him because notifying him would mean that he's no longer in absentia. So the ruling would have been broken and they would have to do all over again, all they have manipulated. You know, that's as the snake who is biting his own tail.
So, Nafisa, when do you think there will be a ruling?
They said the ruling will be given on Thursday, December 14th.
What are your hopes?
Well, as always, we hope that he will follow the ruling of his colleague from Diganchor, who did wonderful work and who said that given the way things happened, this is not lawful. You have to put him back in the list, because that was only that question. He is entitled to vote and to be voted for. So put him back in the list, give him his document, let him go get his sponsor and apply to be a candidate for the upcoming presidential election. That's what the judge from Diganchor said, and that's what we hope that this judge from Dakar will say also.
Nafisa Dia is a member of Ousmane Sonko's Pastel party. She was speaking with us from Moncton, Canada. There appears to be a crisis of governance in Nigeria's River State. 27 members of the state's 32-member House of Assembly, all members of the governing People's Democratic Party, the PDP, defected this week to the opposition All Progressives Congress, APC party. Local media report said current governor Sim Fubara has been at loggerheads with his predecessor Nyesom Wike, who is now the minister of the Federal Capital Territory
in President Tinubu's government. I asked Chief Anam Sara Igbe, and an elder in River State, just what is happening.
There will be plenty of support for all this Congress. There's nothing anybody could have done, but these were people who were elected as members of the People's Democratic Party to pack out the governor, and there's no way anybody can change. Their thinking is democracy, it is democracy as well.
So my understanding is that there are 32 members in the entire House of Assembly in River State. If 27 have defected to the APC, what would this mean in terms of governance?
It would be difficult for me to even say I never saw a physical structure of defectors expressing their opinions as to where they belong. All I saw was that a figure was mentioned, the rest are stories. I'd want to see 27 of them standing, because on the other side, there you have a faction. 24 on this side are saying that they belong to this other faction, where the governor also belongs to.
We understand the governor had an emergency meeting. How was the meeting?
I was in the meeting. 24, that ordinarily should be part of what you would find on the side, also saying that on this side. So I find it very confusing.
May I understand these members who have defected? Were they members of the APC before coming to the PDP, or their PDP going to APC?
I can say that it was a full PDP house, and I've never seen any of such slide across to the other party.
Have to do with the fact that Governor Fubara has not been on good terms with his predecessor.
I do not want to think that those who defected, if they truly defected, got the consent of anybody, they would have just acted on their own. But I can say that Governor Fubara, he keeps the relationship with his principal, Governor Nyesomwike.
Chief Anam Sara Egba is an elder in River State. He was speaking with us from the capital, Port Harcourt. Human Rights Watch is calling on the United States to take what it calls concrete action to stop abuses in Sudan. This after Washington recently determined that Sudan's warring parties have committed atrocities in the past 8 months. On Monday, Human Rights Watch said the U.S. must ensure that the perpetrators are held accountable for their actions. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
The United States State Department said last week that the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces have committed atrocities. Letitia Beida is the Deputy Director for Africa at Human Rights Watch, who is based in Rome, Italy. She says while it's good that the U.S. government has acknowledged that the warring parties in Sudan have committed crimes against humanity in Darfur, acknowledgement alone is meaningless unless accompanied by actions by the U.S. government. Beida says now the U.S. government should take specific actions to protect civilians in Sudan and ensure the perpetrators of abuses are held to account.
Actions which are, of course, obligations in many ways when you have such serious violations of international humanitarian law. It is critical for the international response to mirror, to echo the scale of the abuses we are talking about. So what we would like to see is a much more robust international and regional response. The response so far has been limited and has in no shape or form hampered, tackled the root causes of the violence, the cycles of impunity in the country.
Beida says Human Rights Watch expects the U.S. government to initiate robust consultations with the international community to explore viable ways to protect civilians in Sudan.
So we would like the U.S. rallying support at the level of the Security Council, but also in terms of engagement with IGAD member states and also the African Union to try and come forward with a new civilian protection force to be deployed to Darfur, where the needs of communities are immediate and urgent.
Beida says the U.S. government and the rest of the international community should impose sanctions on individuals responsible for serious crimes, including targeting the resources that allow perpetrators to commit crimes.
We would also like them to follow up and follow through with some of the individual sanctions that they have already imposed on individuals responsible for some of these abuses. That needs to continue. It also needs to go hand in hand with public condemnation of the existing arms embargo in Darfur.
Human Rights Watch calls for including civilian voices, such as displaced communities, human rights and women rights defenders, in any discussion about the situation in Sudan, and in particular in Darfur. Beida says many of the problems in Sudan are a result of the international community ignoring the concerns of the communities.
A very good example. In 2020, when the Security Council voted to remove the peacekeeping mission from Darfur, many of the internally displaced communities there, notably in West Darfur, were warning that removing the peacekeeping forces would remove a key deterrent to attacks. And we saw almost immediately an uptake in serious attacks taking place in the West Darfur state. Those voices need to be part of all the discussions going forward more broadly on issues of civilian protections. What are the needs? You know, these are the communities who know what they need, but also what do they see for the future and what does justice look like for those who have faced these abuses?
Human Rights Watch says other concrete actions should include taking issues to the UN Security Council, including pressing for a council visit to Eastern Chad to meet survivors of atrocities. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
The chief of police in Sierra Leone says the country's former president, Ernest Bai Koroma, is accused of involvement in the organization of what the government calls an attempted coup last month. According to the French news agency, the AFP, police chief Faya Selou told Information Minister Cherna Ba during a press conference that he is a suspect. On Saturday, authorities said the former president had been confined to his home amid questioning. Armed attackers stormed a military armory, two barracks, two prisons, and two police stations during the early hours of November 26, clashing with security forces. The fighting left 21 people dead, 18 members of the security forces, and three assailants, according to Bar. Since then, 80 people have been arrested. Koroma, who led Sierra Leone from 2007 to 2018, was questioned on Tuesday for the fourth time by police in Freetown. And that's it for this Wednesday, December 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on the